So we're just running a few minutes ahead of schedule, which is great. That just means we have a little more time to visit at the break, maybe a little more time for lunch. I want to remind everybody, any questions you have for our speakers, write them down, and we'll collect them towards the end of the morning session for our speakers panel. You also have the opportunity to ask questions from the floor if something comes up. So that's usually a very good part of our program. Our next speaker is Dr. Clive Grant. Dr. Grant hails from Colorado. He did his undergraduate training at the University of Northern Colorado and then did medical school training at the University of Colorado. He subsequently did his residency at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester and really has been there ever since. He has recently retired and to our benefit retired here in Arizona. So that's the reason we were able to capture him for our program. He is here through communication with one of our members, Dr. Rich Harding. So I appreciate Dr. Harding's help in securing Dr. Grant for the symposium. Dr. Grant has been a very active leader and educator in the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, and more importantly, in the American Association of Endocrine Surgeons, and has served as president of that fine organization. He has been an extremely active educator from all levels, from medical students all the way up through colleagues, and has spoken extensively on endocrine topics throughout the world. Dr. Grant's first talk today is on adrenal incidentalomas. Please help me welcome Dr. Grant.
Thank you, Dr. King. It's a pleasure, an honor to be invited to give what turns out to be several presentations. Almost all of them will be dealing with various aspects of endocrine surgery. The title here, Adrenal Incidentals, Pearls and Pitfalls. Hopefully, once you finish listening to this, you'll have a good idea of how to manage so-called adrenal incidentalomas. You'll see in the book that I don't have any disclosures. We're supposed to occasionally put this up as a slide. I don't want you to take that as any discouragement. If you have extra money, I'm happy to talk to you afterwards so that we can make some good arrangements here. Let's start with a case that these are all real cases that we saw in Rochester some time ago, a 55-year-old lady who a year previous to our seeing her had a mastectomy for a 3.5-centimeter infiltrating ductal cancer, receptor positive, sentinel node was negative. She underwent four cycles of AC chemotherapy, pretty standard stuff, and was maintained on tamoxifen. After she had been through the operation, through her chemotherapy, and was on tamoxifen, she was not feeling particularly well, and her white count didn't return fully to normal, and her home physician decided to look further. Aside from the tamoxifen, taking no medication, past medical and surgical history were really non-contributory to the present episode except for the breast cancer. On examination, her vital signs were normal. In fact, her exam was entirely normal, nothing by physical exam to suggest any problems. And her initial laboratory studies, her electrolytes, glucose, creatinine, liver functions, and her screening chest x-ray were all negative. This shows the CT scan. On the left is the contrast study. You can see the arrow. As it turns out, if you look at all of the cuts, it's a 6-centimeter mass. And then on the right is after contrast. You can see the mass there. There were no hepatic masses and no lymphadenopathy. So let's just sort of think. We'd take a poll, but we don't have a convenient way of doing that. So what further testing would you think would be appropriate? Looking for functional adrenal tumors, by a whole bunch of different methods. We'll go over a CT biopsy, bone scan, or PET scan. Some of these studies were obtained before she arrived in Rochester, some that we did afterwards. We did not test for aldosterone. She didn't have hypertension. Her potassium was normal. We looked at cortisol and pheo production. They were both normal. We did not do a dexamethasone suppression test because she didn't appear to have Cushing's and her cortisol were normal. Prior to coming to Rochester, she had a CT-directed biopsy of the right adrenal, and the pathologist said the sample was small, but was sufficient to say that the cytology was positive for malignancy, presumed consistent with breast cancer. A bone scan had been obtained and did not show any bone metastases. We did get a PET scan looking for any other evidence of metastatic breast cancer, and the only abnormality was this large right adrenal mass. So then the question is, well, what should we do? Should we switch her to a different breast cancer drug? Should we do an adrenalectomy, either laparoscopically or open? Or should we potentially radiate that mass? What we chose to do was an open anterior approach for right adrenalectomy, and what we found was actually an adrenal cortical carcinoma. It had no invasion, no other extra adrenal disease, and we were feeling quite good about that. Unfortunately, her outcome, 8 months later, she died of metastatic adrenal cancer. Unfortunately, that's the way adrenal cancer behaves in many patients. So following this talk, I hope that you will understand the definition and frequency of adrenal incidentalomas, be prepared to evaluate and make management recommendations, and understand the pitfalls and nuances of a management algorithm that I'll go over. By definition, somewhat arbitrarily, any adrenal nodule that's about a centimeter or larger and is reasonably well defined. What I mean by that is that some vague thickening doesn't really qualify. If somebody has strong indication of hormonal hyperfunction, that's not an incidentaloma, that's a presentation of a functioning adrenal tumor. The patient I presented might be on the margin of incidentaloma because I say here prior or concurrent malignancy. This patient really had nothing to suggest an adrenal cancer or an adrenal tumor. So I sort of put that in, but if you were doing routine follow-up for a malignancy, and especially if you had either localized tumor symptoms or constitutional symptoms, that would not quite qualify. By historical means, we have autopsy studies that show that if you include even tiny adrenal nodules, the frequency can go up to as many as 15%, and the frequency increases with age. I'll show you that in a second. The problem really was defined and surfaced as a problem once CT scan was introduced, and that was in the late 70s, and so early in the 1980s, these two prominent endocrine surgeons published small series at that time looking at the problem and highlighting the problem of incidentalomas. This shows you an early CT scan. Most of the time you can't get both adrenals on one cut and really visualize it well, but what you can see there, the V is the vena cava, and extending posteriorly from that is the sort of thin, slender comma appearance of the right adrenal. And then you can also see by the white arrow, the left adrenal, we kind of say that looks more like a witch's hat with a peak top and two limbs coming down just above the very faint top of the kidney there. And this is an early scan of ours from 1983 that does show a small but definite hypodense lump in the right adrenal, and this is an incidentaloma. As I mentioned, it's age dependent. If you have somebody under the age of 30, then they have a less than 1% chance of having an adrenal incidentaloma. If they have an adrenal tumor, it's usually something important. When you get to the 70 to 80-year-old patient, about 7% will have adrenal tumors. So this is sort of the basic starting algorithm. If they have an adrenal tumor, the first thing we do is evaluate for hyperfunction, and I'll show you the screening studies that we do there. If it is not hyperfunctioning, we move on to assessment for malignancy and make a decision about operating or observing. So let's look at endocrine hyperfunctioning. What are those tumors that we screen for? Pheochromocytoma, aldosteronoma, and Cushing's adenoma. We don't really look for hyperfunctioning adrenal androgen secreting tumors. They are so rare. How do we do it? Well, it turns out that about 5% of incidentalomas are actually pheochromocytomas. And if you flip that around, and I'll show you that tomorrow in the pheochromocytoma talk, between 30 and 40% of the pheochromocytomas that we now remove are found as incidentalomas. So it's worth investigating. What I make a pitch for here is we do 24-hour urine fractionated catecholamines and metanephrines. If you put those two together, almost 100% will have an abnormal test. Now, I highlight the word functioning because we are now, with CT and MRI, we now occasionally find tumors that are pheos and prove to be pheos on histology that in fact have normal values, and they are in essence pre-functioning. They haven't gotten big enough, manufacturing of catecholamines just hasn't happened to the point where they are either clinically evident or even biochemically evident. But most of the time, if you check 24-hour urine catechols and metanephrines, METs and CATs as we call it, you'll be able to detect that. For primary aldosteronism, first is the importance of finding it. It's the most common cause of secondary hypertension. In contrast to what we thought a number of years ago when we'd get a serum potassium level. If your serum potassium level is normal, we figured, okay, must not have an aldosteronoma. In fact, more than 50% of patients with biopsy or with surgically removed aldosteronomas have a normal potassium. So the best screening technique is to get a morning sample for plasma aldosterone and plasma renin activity and look at the ratio. The nice thing about this is that the patients can be on any antihypertensive other than aldosterone antagonists such as spironolactone, and it will still be a valid test. And in our laboratory, the way it's set up, if you have a ratio of 20 to 1 or higher, and if the aldosterone level is 15, that's a positive screen. Now, that doesn't mean they have an aldosteronoma. It means you need to then go through further confirmation testing. And again, tomorrow I'll go over that. But that's the screening method for aldosterone that we subscribe to. Pre-Cushing's syndrome is a real thing. What it means is patients who have no obvious signs or symptoms of hypercortisolism but do have an incidentaloma with autonomous secretion. And the difference is that they can still have complications such as hypertension or osteoporosis, but they don't have the obvious physical stigmata of Cushing's. Again, about 5 to 6% of incidentalomas will have this so-called pre-Cushing syndrome, as was demonstrated in a large Italian study. In fact, they have said that even if you test once, you may miss it and you need to test again. We haven't really done that much. The cost benefit of that has never been really clarified. But the first time testing We feel strongly that the best test is a 1 milligram overnight dexamethasone suppression test. So you give a milligram of dexamethasone in the evening and check a morning 8 a.m. cortisol level, and it should be less than 5. In fact, most of the time it should be less than 3. If it's 5 or above, you need further testing to look for to definitively diagnose Cushing's syndrome. You do that sometimes a nighttime salivary cortisol or a confirmation low-dose dexamethasone test. Now, I want to emphasize, I call the first test an overnight dexamethasone test. The low-dose dexamethasone suppression test is a two-day, half a milligram four times a day for 2 days. So it's a significant test, and it's not to be confused with the single-dose overnight suppression. You know, we test for hypothyroidism by looking at TSH, the pituitary hormone. ACTH assays are just not good enough, at this point at least, to use that to define cortisol oversecretion. So we don't use ACTH in the diagnosis of cortisol suppression at a screening level. So if you have a patient with hyperfunctioning adrenal nodules, there, and it's confirmed, unless the patient is not a surgical candidate, we would recommend that they have adrenalectomy. Again, I'll go over that in more detail on the specific syndromes tomorrow. But if, and most of these patients obviously don't have hyperfunction that you can demonstrate, the decision is between which ones do you take out that might be small adrenal cancers, and which ones can you afford to observe. And the decision is really one of considering the morbidity and mortality of removing benign lesions, and just the fact that you, even laparoscopically, can have trouble, hospitalization expense, to take out a benign, essentially non-worrisome adrenal mass, compared to leaving something behind that may actually be malignant. The methodology that we use for deciding about who to operate on with adrenal nodules, first and the highest criteria is the mass size. And I'll show you some data that we looked at some years ago that helps us with that. And then the second is so-called imaging phenotype. What I mean by that is the way it looks in all different respects, typically with CT scan. Another option is image-guided biopsy. I will quickly say that we virtually never use that to distinguish benign from malignant primary adrenal lesions. In patients who have metastatic disease and there's disease in the adrenal, and you need verification that, yes, it's truly malignant, then CT radiographers will do that. Very rarely do we define adrenal infections with a needle biopsy. So, and then another technique mostly of historic interest is iodocholesterol scintigraphy. We don't use needle biopsy, and that agent is no longer even available. So you're really down to mass size and imaging phenotype. What do I mean? Well, as you all know, CT density is measured in Hounsfield units, 0 being distilled water, 1,000 being dense cortical bone, and minus 1,000 is air. A typical adipose ranges from minus 20 to minus 150. The kidney usually is about 20 to 50. If, when measuring a non-contrast adrenal, the tumor, the incidentaloma, has Hounsfield units of 10 or less, that is very reliably benign. Unfortunately, that's kind of the minority. if you give IV contrast, benign adrenal tumors will take up modest to moderately and rapidly wash out typically. Unfortunately, there is overlap, so that's where this becomes a bit of a decision maker. Here is the adrenal nodule. That's an incidentaloma, a little hypodense with, by comparison to the liver, that proved to be benign. There again is the left adrenal with both limbs being seen. Here is another adrenal incidentaloma, again pre-contrast, pretty much isodense with the liver. Here it is post-contrast, and the way that was reported is a 2.8 centimeter tumor, pre-contrast 22 to 28, so not definitively benign. The immediate post-contrast was modest, but a delayed contrast continued to rise, so it was not definitively benign. We ended up taking that out, and it did prove to be an adrenal adenoma. So there's a lot of overlap, and that's why you end up operating on some of these and end up finding benign disease. So we look at CT characteristics, including the shape, the texture, laterality, unilateral versus bilateral, and other characteristics such as hemorrhage, necrosis, and calcifications. An adenoma is typically small, 3 to 4 centimeters or smaller, round, smooth, homogeneous, low density, usually unilateral, limited contrast enhancement. I'll show you the MR characteristics in just a moment, and uncommonly has necrosis, hemorrhage, or calcification. Its growth is usually very slow, if at all. Here is the MRI appearance, so-called in phase, and then because of the fat contained within the adrenal, an out of phase looks like this, where the signal drops out and it looks like a black hole. That, unfortunately, is not specific, but can be helpful. Here is a mass that is about 4 to 5 centimeters. You can see it's smooth, oval, has no irregularity, but the interior of it is heterogeneous. That's a little worrisome. We ended up removing that, and part of it was hemorrhage, part of it was fat necrosis. So something that was relatively large and looked a bit worrisome, but was completely innocent. Again, another mass looks homogeneous. This is pre-contrast, but with contrast, you can see the necrosis in the middle. That is a very characteristic look of a pheochromocytoma. They very commonly have necrotic areas within it, cystic areas. They are typically large. If you're looking for a pheochromocytoma, as I'll mention tomorrow, CT scan is a good technique because they're usually at least 3 centimeters. They're round, oval, sharp margins. They are very commonly inhomogeneous with cystic areas. They're usually one-sided. If they are bilateral, you're usually talking about a syndrome. The contrast enhancement is usually quite impressive. Now, when it has a cavitated area, that's not going to enhance. So it can be, you can be fooled by that, but the part that's solid should enhance considerably. In fact, on MR, they have a characteristic bright white light appearance on T2-weighted MR scans. Necrosis and hemorrhage is common, sometimes calcification, and it's usually very slow growing. As an example, I'm not exactly sure why we just watched this, but I'll put it up anyway. So 1992, you can see a small, somewhat cavitated lesion right behind the vena cava, the right adrenal tumor, 96 and 99. So we watched this over 7 years. And then once we, I guess, got convinced that it ought to come out, we took it out and it proved to be a pheochromocytoma. So an incidentaloma that grew very slowly over 7 years and proved to be a pheochromocytoma. Here's another image of a pheo with a very characteristic cystic necrotic center. Now, adrenal cortical carcinoma, this is what we're trying to avoid missing. They are usually large. I say typically greater than 4 centimeters. They're typically greater than 10 centimeters. But when you're trying to discern a benign adenoma from a huge adrenal cancer, that's easy. It's the overlap that we have to pay attention to. It's usually irregular, inhomogeneous. It's usually solitary and unilateral. But contrast enhancement is vigorous. It's hyperintense on T2 MR imaging, and its growth is relatively rapid. Here is, and I won't say this was an incidentaloma, but occasionally large adrenal tumors can present as a surprise, like the very first patient that I showed. This was a big adrenal cortical carcinoma. As you can see, it's about 20 centimeters. It has calcifications. It's inhomogeneous. Some of the edges are very irregular, and this is what it looks like after it's removed. Metastatic disease can also be seen in the adrenal. They're usually not very large. They're irregular, unclear margins, inhomogeneous, and often are bilateral. The enhancement is high, both on CT and MR, and hemorrhage and necrosis is common. The growth is usually relatively slow. This is an example of metastatic colon cancer, an enhancing rim necrotic center. You can have unusual tumors. This is a patient who had tuberculosis, and it involved both adrenals, and the patient had Addison's disease. In fact, at times, you can have a pseudo, if you will, incidentaloma. This is a patient who had a malignant fibrous histiocytoma. We were watching. It really changed very little, but because of its size, we took it out. It involved the adrenal vein, but was actually originating from the retroperitoneum. Again, a cystic large lymphoma, rare tumor of the adrenal. Now, a number of years ago, we looked at the same thing when it was in the early 80s about incidentalomas, because size was a major criterion then, and it remains that way now. My bias, quite arbitrary, was that anything larger than about 3 centimeters, I thought probably ought to come out. So a resident was working with me and put together a series of about 350 incidentalomas that we had either observed or removed. And you can see here are the malignancies, two of them that are 5 centimeters. Now, I have special attention to the cut point at 6 centimeters, because that has been a well-popularized cut point in the medical literature. 6 centimeters or larger is the cut point. That would have missed two of the malignancies in this series. Now, if you look at my idea, well, we would have gotten all the malignancies. And so I was actually pretty happy about that. I thought, okay, we've proven what my bias is, and that's really what this is all about, is I'm right. And then he said, yeah, you could look at it that way. He was pretty tactful, and he said, but if you draw the line at 4 centimeters, you operate on 20% fewer people, and you still incorporate all the cancers. And it's pretty cool when you do a study, and it actually sort of verifies what you think, but then you actually came up with something new that has good scientific basis. So from that point on, we used 4 centimeters as our relative size cutoff to proceed. We put together with that the imaging phenotype, and that's how we get to this. So the algorithm, based on observations, we can say that about 10% of incidentalomas are hyperfunctioning. So it's worth looking for that hyperfunctioning with the biochemical screening. Fewer than 5% are adrenal cancers. 95% of the adrenal cancers are larger than 4 centimeters. And 95% of the adrenal adenomas are less than 5. But there is this overlap. The imaging phenotype is helpful, and fine needle aspiration is rarely indicated. So if you start with a history and physical, get a 24-hour urine for metanephrines and catecholamines, a 1 milligram overnight dexamethasone study, and if the patient has hypertension, get a blood test in the morning for plasma aldo and plasma renin activity. If it's non-functioning, you want to look at imaging phenotype. If it looks completely benign, then it's worth observation, and we often will get one repeat CT scan somewhat arbitrarily at 3 or 6 months. If it's functioning, or if the mass is over 4 centimeters, most of the time, with the exception of very innocent larger tumors, we'll recommend proceeding surgically. Now, if the benign tumor, if in fact it's not benign, but rather is suspicious appearing, then by the imaging phenotype, we'll recommend surgically proceeding. Or if on follow-up, the mass enlarges by a centimeter or more, then we'll recommend surgical removal. The method of doing the operation is really dependent on the size, the characteristics, and from a recommendation standpoint, most of the time adrenal cancers are large enough, irregular enough, and stuck to surrounding tissues enough that we would still aim to take those out from an anterior open approach. However, there are the rare, well-defined, actually small, and the smallest adrenal cancer I've seen myself was 2.4 centimeters. So it, even though it is really rare, they do occasionally happen. This is a picture of our downtown buildings. I try to make Rochester look like a big city with that. It's not all that big. The sky is blue, but when it's blue, as it was this morning in Rochester, it was also 4 degrees below zero. So I do enjoy being out in Phoenix. Thank you very much.